Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Tuesday, July 5th, 2022. President Joe Biden ordering all flags at public buildings and grounds and military posts flown at half staff. He says it's a mark of respect for the victims of the senseless acts of gun violence perpetuated on our Independence Day, July 4th, 2022, in Highland Park, Illinois. As we learned today, a seventh shooting victim has now died. Another four dozen people have been wounded. President Biden also saying he is not giving up on fighting the epidemic on gun violence. Coming up, an update on the investigation into the alleged shooter who's now in custody, plus reaction from the White House and members of Congress, both Democrats and Republicans. White House also responding to that letter from U.S. basketball star Brittany Griner, wrote President Biden from jail in Russia, where she faces drug smuggling charges, requesting his help to be released, saying she's afraid she may never see her loved ones again. U.S. officials have been saying that they believe Griner is wrongfully detained. NATO ambassadors signing the paperwork to welcome Finland and Sweden to the military alliance, a move spurred by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Next step in the process is ratification by all current NATO member countries, 30 of them. State Department questioned about its conclusion that the bullet that killed a Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh in the West Bank in May likely came from the Israeli Defense Forces, but that the killing was not likely intentional. And President Biden awarding the Medal of Honor to four U.S. Army veterans for their bravery and heroic acts during the Vietnam War. This from ABC News. Authorities believe Monday's mass shooting at a 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois, had been planned for weeks, and they say more than 70 rounds were fired from the gunman's high-powered rifle. The 21-year-old suspect, Robert Bobby Cremo III, is accused of opening fire from a roof of a business, which he accessed from a fire escape ladder, police said. Police said Cremo wore women's clothing during the shooting to apparently allow him to hide his facial tattoos and blend in with the crowd to flee. That from ABC News. We got an update today from the deputy chief for the Lake County Sheriff's Department in Illinois, Christopher Covelli.
So throughout the past 24 hours, investigators have spoken with numerous witnesses, some of the survivors. They've had the opportunity to review numerous video clips, both from cell phone video recordings and fixed cameras in the area. And they've conducted a number of other follow-up investigations. And based on where we're at this point in the investigation, and some of this is still preliminary, so is subject to change as we keep moving forward, but we do believe Cremo pre-planned this attack for several weeks. He brought a high-powered rifle to this parade. He accessed the roof of a business via a fire escape ladder and began opening fire on the innocent Independence Day celebration goers. The rifle was purchased in Illinois, and the information we have thus far is that it appears to have been purchased legally by Cremo. During the attack, Cremo was dressed in woman's clothing, and investigators do believe he did this to conceal his facial tattoos and his identity and help him during the escape with the other people who were fleeing the chaos. During the attack, we believe that Cremo fired more than 70 rounds from this rifle into the crowd of innocent people. Following the attack, Cremo exited the roof, he dropped his rifle, and he blended in with the crowd, and he escaped. He walked to his mother's home, who lived in the area, and he blended right in with everybody else as they were running around, almost as he was an innocent spectator as well. He borrowed his mother's vehicle. We issued an alert yesterday afternoon. Chief Jogman provided the vehicle information and Cremo's information. We're very thankful that an alert member of the community saw Cremo's vehicle traveling southbound on Route 41, dialed 911. An alert North Chicago police officer spotted the vehicle, waited for additional backup units to arrive, conducted a traffic stop, and they were able to safely apprehend Cremo with no injuries to the officers. Inside the vehicle, there was a second rifle located. Indications is that was purchased by Cremo as well. Thus far, over 30 people were injured during the attack, and this does not include the six who lost their lives. Right now, Cremo remains in custody at this time. There are no indications that there was anybody else involved in this attack. By all indications, it appears Cremo was acting by himself. The Lake County State's Attorney's Office has been with us from the ground level. They're with us this morning. They were with us through the night. We continue to review the information. Investigators are still developing leads and very critical information. Once we're at a point where we're ready to review all of that information for charges, we will sit down with the state's attorney and review for criminal charges.
Christopher Covelli, Deputy Chief, Lake County Sheriff's Department in Illinois, news conference today alongside the mayor of Highland Park. More from the ABC News article on the investigation. Robert Cremo III, who was apprehended Monday evening after an hours-long manhunt, is believed to be linked to social media posts that discuss or depict acts of violence, including shooting people, a law enforcement source briefed on the case told ABC News. Also, this from the article at ABC. Analysts say Cremo appears to have had an extensive online presence that was littered with signs of hatred, mental health issues, and a gravitation toward hard right and neo-fascist ideologies. President Biden mentioned the shooting briefly on Monday during the 4th of July celebration at the White House with military families.
I signed a law, the first real gun safety law in 30 years. And things will get better still, but not without more hard work together. You all heard what happened today. But each day, we're reminded there's nothing guaranteed about our democracy, nothing guaranteed about our way of life. We have to fight for it, defend it, and earn it by voting to refine, evolve, and extend the calling of America to move forward boldly and unafraid.
President Biden at the White House yesterday, the 4th of July celebration. He also tweeted on Monday after the shooting, "Jill and I are shocked by the senseless gun violence that has yet again brought grief to an American community this Independence Day. As always, we are grateful for the first responders and law enforcement on the scene. I will not give up fighting the epidemic of gun violence." And today at the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre's regular news conference, some follow-up questions about what additional anti-gun violence measures the president believes should be implemented.
Illinois already has a red flag law. It isn't used that often. It wasn't used in this case, even though the suspect apparently had put some violent imagery online. Is your expectation that the gun bill that just passed is something that would have addressed this kind of situation?
So I want to be very clear. Yes, the bipartisan anti-gun reform bill was an important first step. It was the first step that we have seen in 30 years. The last time was when this president led the banning assault weapons legislation that lasted for about 10 years and sunset in 2004. And so the president believes that we need to make sure that we ban assault weapons, right? That is one of the things that's being reported that this suspect had. And so banning assault weapons is something, again, that he's going to continue to fight for. With that said, he understands that there's more work to be done. The bipartisan bill is going to save some lives. Like, that is true. It will save some lives. But we need more. We need to do more work. And the president's going to continue to do that fight. What we know, one thing I would say about red flag laws, as we've seen them over the past several years, is that when they are implemented, they do work in red states and in blue states. And they are also very much in line of what majority of Americans support. Again, when they're actually enacted, red flags laws are actually effective.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre at her regular news conference with reporters in the White House briefing room. Senator John Cornyn of Texas was the lead Republican senator who helped negotiate the bipartisan gun violence prevention bill that President Biden recently signed into law and was referenced during that question to Karine Jean-Pierre. Senator Cornyn retweeting an article from the Daily Mail in Great Britain with the headline, "Revealed Highland Park shooter who killed at least six and injured dozens in July 4th massacre was known to law enforcement." Also in that article mentioned that he dramatized school shootings online. The Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky took a similar position today, emphasizing the need for early intervention to prevent troubled young men from committing terrible crimes. McConnell was at a Chamber of Commerce luncheon in Paducah, Kentucky.
Senator McConnell, thank you for showing up today. We appreciate you. I'm Justin Jones with Local 6 News, and I do have one question. You recently voted in support of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which encourages states to follow red flag laws or pass red flag laws. Following the shooting in Highland Park, do you think more should be done?
Yeah, I think yesterday's shooting is another example of what the problem is. The problem is mental health, and these young men who seem to be inspired to commit these atrocities. So I think the bill that we passed targeted the problem. In that particular instance, it was school safety and mental health. We have got to figure out some way to identify these troubled young men, and it's very complicated. Because after every one of these shootings, there are people that say, oh, you know, I thought he's pretty strange. I wish I'd notified somebody about it. One of the things we did in our bill, although this shooter yesterday was 22, we did open up the juvenile records to background checks. And hopefully that will help us do a better job of identifying people who have these mental problems before they carry out these awful atrocities.
The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell at the Paducah Area Chamber of Commerce luncheon in his home state of Kentucky today. By the way, it was clarified today that alleged shooter is actually 21, will turn 22 this fall. The Highland Park Mayor Nancy Rotering first revealing this morning in an interview on NBC's Today Show that the firearm used in the July 4th parade shooting in her town was obtained legally. We also just heard a few moments ago from the local deputy sheriff that they understand that as well. Rotering, a Democrat, saying on NBC, I don't know where the gun came from, but I do know that it was legally obtained. And she said at some point the U.S. needs to have a conversation about mass shootings, which she called weekly events that involve the murder of dozens of people with legally obtained guns. She said if that's what our laws stand for, then we need to reexamine the laws. Soon after that interview, U.S. Senator from Illinois, Dick Durbin, also a Democrat and chair of the Judiciary Committee, interviewed on MSNBC.
We heard from the mayor there that this gun appears to have been legally purchased. Can you walk us through how that can happen in the state of Illinois, which has some of the tighter gun regulations across the country? How does one purchase a gun like this? And should there have been some sort of red flag that should have gone off that should have prevented it?
Well, it's often said, it's part of urban legend, that Chicago has the toughest gun laws in the nation. That may have been true at some point in the past. Supreme Court rulings have basically stopped that from occurring. We're subject to the same regulations and limitations when it comes to gun safety. And in this circumstance in America, we have this anomaly. You have to be 21 years old by federal law to purchase a handgun, but you can purchase a long gun, which includes these weapons like AR-15, at the age of 18. Now, our recent bill said we're going to have a better background check on younger purchases. I salute that. I support that. But it's still beyond any understanding that I can offer as to why in the world individuals have to purchase and own a gun that was made for military purposes. I put a clip on this that has multiple pieces of ammunition that can be shot at an individual, and you can see the horror that we witnessed yesterday in Highland Park.
Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois, also chair of the Judiciary Committee, interviewed this morning on MSNBC. And Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican, announcing on Twitter today that police will stop enforcing the good and substantial reason standards for wearing and carrying permits following the Supreme Court's decision last month striking down a New York state law that puts restrictions on the carrying of concealed weapons in public places. But the New York Times reporting a sweeping package of legislation will make it more difficult to obtain a handgun license and buy high-capacity rifles in New Jersey, part of a patchwork effort by states with strict gun laws to work around that Supreme Court ruling aimed at dismantling them. Republican Congresswoman Claudia Tenney of New York was on Fox News Channel this morning responding to calls by President Biden and other Democrats for stricter gun control.
We're talking about Independence Day, and what nobody's really mentioned is the concept of our government and our independence is self-governance, self-accountability, and the ability to protect yourself. And yet they're talking about more gun laws. We haven't met the mark yet. We've had all kinds of these horrific tragedies, whether it's using a gun, crashing into a parade, using a vehicle, and killing others. And we have a lack of self-governance, a lack of accountability. And it's so easy. The knee-jerk reaction is to blame the gun. In New York State, for example, we just had a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and Justice Thomas said we do have the right to keep and bear arms. This was derived from a case of people that were seeing a lot of crime rising in their neighborhoods, and they couldn't get access to a concealed carry permit in New York State. And it was revealed that in this society where there's no accountability, where there's high crime rates, where people aren't going to work, where people feel threatened, they have the right to bear arms. We've passed some of the harshest gun laws, and just this past week, Governor Kathy Hochul passed more gun laws to restrict rights. Chicago and Illinois have some of the harshest gun laws, yet they don't stop gun violence. We have a problem with society, with mental illness, and people that don't understand that we are a system founded on self-governance, accountability. People need to get back to work, get off social media, and we need to really look at this mental health issue that's being caused by our society.
Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, Republican from New York, on Fox News Channel. Congressman Eric Swalwell, Democrat from California, tweeting today a photo of another Republican congresswoman, Lauren Boebert of Colorado. Boebert holding an AR-15 rifle, and that's one photo. The photo right next to her in the tweet is the Highland Park shooting suspect. And the caption from Congressman Swalwell, "Let's start drawing straight lines." Boebert responding via Twitter, "Democrats love to talk about dangerous rhetoric. Swalwell is a Russian hoax conspirator and failed presidential candidate that slept with a Chinese spy. Now he's comparing me to a deranged murderer. When will Democrats condemn his dangerous rhetoric?" Highland Park is about 30 miles north of Chicago, and today Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, a Democrat, held a news conference with Congresswoman Robin Kelly, also a Democrat, plus local leaders discussing the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, that new federal anti-gun violence law. Mayor Lightfoot asked by a reporter about helping Highland Park after the mass shooting.
Can you shed light on your conversations yesterday with Mayor Reuterang and what sort of resources you offered her?
Well, the mayor and I have known each other for 30 years. We were law school classmates, and we are in frequent contact through a lot of different means, not the least of which is the Metro Mayor's Caucus, where she's been a leader, and I've been deeply involved with that. The minute I understood what had happened in Highland Park, I reached out to her and offered anything that we could do. Me as a mayor, unfortunately, have a lot of experience in dealing with mass shootings and crisis communications. I offered, obviously, the support of the Chicago Police Department, which immediately sprung into action and provided aerial support in the hunt for the suspect, which thankfully he was brought into custody last night. Obviously, a lot of work needs to be done to put together the evidence against him and get him charged. But look, I meant what I said earlier. These kinds of things don't have any geographic boundaries.
Right.
We are all bound together, and we should be. And I hope, frankly, that the efforts that I have extended to Mayor Reuterang, that people all across our region don't hear, oh, something else happened in Chicago, not my problem. When this happens anywhere, whether it's here on the southeast side, whether it's in Austin, Inglewood, whether it's in Highland Park or Uvalde or Buffalo or Philadelphia last night, we all have to feel this as Americans. If we don't, then and we turn a blind eye and get numb to the consequences of what is destroying the fabric of our communities, then we are lost as a country. Our democracy will fail. You know, we have to all be in this together. And so my conversations with her last night and again this morning was, whatever you need, we will be here for you.
Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot at a news conference today in Chicago. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today, which you can get as a podcast on the free C-SPAN Now mobile video app and wherever you get your podcasts. A few more headlines. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, announcing the date and time of their next hearing. It's Tuesday, July 12th, 10 a.m. Eastern. As always, it will be live on the C-SPAN networks, including right here on C-SPAN Radio. The Justice Department settling a decades-old lawsuit, writes AP, filed by a group of men who were rounded up by the government in the weeks after the September 11, 2001 attacks and held in a federal jail in New York in conditions the department's own watchdog called abusive and harsh. The settlement announced today calls for $98,000 paid out among the six men who filed the suit and were held without terrorism charges at the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. Two of Britain's most senior cabinet ministers resigned on Tuesday. AP calls it a move that could spell the end of Prime Minister Boris Johnson's leadership after months of scandals. And U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken tweeting, Richard Nephew will serve as our coordinator on global anti-corruption. Richard's experience and dedication will be an asset to our efforts worldwide to address transnational corruption and kleptocracy, key components of the White House strategy on countering corruption. Business Insider reports that Richard Nephew is an international sanctions expert and that he also appreciates the jokes about his name over the years, including someone putting this together that the name Rich Nephew in charge of anti-corruption efforts seems to fit. From the New York Times, Brittany Griner, the WNBA star who has been detained in Russia on drug charges since February, sent a handwritten letter to President Biden on Monday asking him not to forget about her. She writes, as I sit in a Russian prison alone with my thoughts and without the protection of my wife, family, friends, Olympic jersey, or any accomplishments, I'm terrified I might be here forever. She continued, I realize that you are dealing with so much, but please don't forget about me and the other American detainees. Please do all you can to bring us home. Griner's wife, Sherelle Griner, telling CBS Mornings that the family has not received a response from the White House.
Everything about this is a calculation for me because I have to walk the fine line of, you know, harm versus help when it comes to my wife right now. So as much as I want to, you know, advocate for her and push for, you know, our government to do everything, you know, I also have to take into account that she's in a position where she could be harmed also by any and everything I do. And so it's a thin line to walk. And initially, you know, I was told, you know, just we're going to try and reserve, you know, we're going to try and handle this behind scenes and, you know, let's not raise her value and, you know, stay quiet. And, you know, I did that. And respectfully, we're over 140 days at this point. That does not work. And so I will not be quiet anymore. I will find that balance of, you know, harm versus help in pushing our government to do everything that's possible, because being quiet, they are not moving. They are not doing anything. And so my wife is struggling, and we have to help her.
Sherelle Griner talking about Brittany Griner on the CBS Mornings program early morning. Later in the afternoon, reporters asking about this letter from Griner to White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
Can you talk about the status of the letter that Brittany Griner sent to the president? Has he been briefed on it? Has he even read it? Griner's wife was on television this morning. She really wants to hear from the president. Will he reach out to her in any fashion?
So I can say that the president did read the letter. I was there when he read the letter. This is something, Brittany Griner being held in Moscow, we believe the Federation is wrongfully, she's being wrongfully detained in Moscow at this time. This is an issue that is a priority for this president. As you have heard us say before, he believes that any U.S. national that is held abroad or detained or held hostage abroad, we need to bring back safely, and we are going to use every tool that we possibly can to make that happen. Again, this is a priority for the president. I do want to share that on Saturday, Mrs. Griner spoke with National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. That is their second call in the past about 10 days that they have spoken. Secretary Blinken also spoke with Mrs. Griner as well recently. I don't have anything else to read out as far as a potential call or meeting with her family, but clearly we believe she is wrongfully detained. We believe she needs to come home. She should be home, as well as Paul Whelan as well, who's being held, and any other U.S. nationals who is being wrongfully detained abroad.
Okay. Hi, friend. Hi. Just to follow up on that, Griner's coach said, if this was LeBron, she would be home, right? It's a statement about the value of women. It's a statement about a black person, a statement about the value of a gay person. All of those things we know is true. Do you see this as a double standard?
This is a president who has put all of the things that you just laid out, the LGBTQ community, women, people of color. He has fought for those communities throughout his career, and you have seen that in policies that he has put forward. Again, this is a priority for this president. He's doing everything that he can. The White House is closely coordinating as well with the special presidential envoy for hostage affairs, who has met with Brittany's family, her teammates, and her support network. So we are going to continue to have those conversations, and we're going to make sure that she and others get home safely.
The White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre with reporters in the White House briefing room. Griner arrested in February on charges of possessing cannabis oil. If she's convicted of drug smuggling, she could face up to 10 years in jail. Her trial began last week and is set to resume on Thursday. From Associated Press, the 30 NATO allies signed off on the accession protocols for Sweden and Finland on Tuesday, sending the membership bids of the two nations to the alliance capitals for legislative approvals and possible political trouble in Turkey. The move further increases Russia's strategic isolation in the wake of the invasion of neighboring Ukraine in February and military struggles there since. Securing parliamentary approval for the new members in Turkey could still pose a problem, even though Sweden, Finland, and Turkey reached a memorandum of understanding at the Madrid summit. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan warned that Ankara could block the process if the two countries fail to grant Turkey's demand for the extradition of people it views as terror suspects. I'm reporting from AP. Here's the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg at a joint news conference at NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium, with the foreign ministers of Sweden and Finland.
At the summit last week, Allied leaders agreed to invite Finland and Sweden to join the alliance. NATO ambassadors have just signed the accession protocols for Finland and Sweden. This is an historic day for Finland, for Sweden, for NATO, and for Euro-Atlantic security. Finland and Sweden will make strong and important contributions to our alliance. Our forces are interoperable. They have trained, exercised, and served together for many years. We share the same values, and we face the same challenges in the Baltic Sea and beyond. Russia's brutal invasion of Ukraine has shattered peace in Europe, so it is important we all stand together at this dangerous moment in our history. I commend all allies for moving so quickly in accepting Finland and Sweden's applications for membership. And I want to thank Turkey, Finland, and Sweden for their constructive approach. The trilateral agreement they signed at the Madrid summit made today possible. I know all three parties are working hard on the implementation and robust follow-through, especially in the fight against terrorism. I now count on all allies to ensure the speedy ratification of the accession according to their national procedures. The security of Finland and Sweden is important for our alliance, including during the ratification process. Many allies have already made clear commitments to Finland and Sweden's security, and NATO has increased our presence in the region, including with more exercises. From now on, Finland and Sweden will have the status as invitees and will participate in our discussions. Today, we have shown once again that NATO's door is open. The enlargement of NATO over several decades has been a great success, reinforcing peace, stability, and democracy across Europe.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, news conference at NATO headquarters with the foreign ministers of Finland and Sweden. As Stoltenberg says that getting all 30 current NATO nations to ratify the two new countries' membership will take several months at least. President Joe Biden this past weekend formally requested Congress do that ratification for the U.S. That's going to require a two-thirds vote in the U.S. Senate. From CNN, the United States has determined that gunfire from the Israeli military was likely responsible for the killing of Al Jazeera correspondent and Palestinian-American Shireen Abu Akleh in May, although an examination overseen by the U.S. of the bullet could not reach a definitive conclusion on its origin due to the condition of the bullet, State Department spokesman Ned Price said in a statement on Monday. The statement continued, "We again offer our deepest condolences to the Abu Akleh family." And the family said in a statement Monday, writes CNN, that they were incredulous about the findings and the notion that the American investigators, whose identity is not disclosed in the statement, believe the bullet likely came from Israeli positions, is cold comfort. Ned Price took some questions about this today in his State Department briefing.
There's an old expression in our profession here that, you know, if you produce something that pisses both sides off, you're probably doing, you know, the right thing. That's a good job. You guys seem to have taken this.
We may have succeeded.
Yeah. You guys seem to have taken this to a new level with the statement yesterday about the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh. No one is happy with this. The Palestinians are upset. Her family is upset because you didn't take a conclusive stand. And the Israelis are upset because you kind of blame them, but you don't have any conclusive evidence to assign that blame. So this seems to be another case of the administration trying to please everybody and then pleasing no one. Can you explain what it is that makes you think that the preponderance of evidence that you've seen shows that it was that the shot that killed her was fired by an Israeli? And then after that, can you also explain why it is that if you believe that, then why are you not assigning blame? Thank you.
Sure. So first, Matt, to one of your points, our goal in this was not to please everyone. Our goal in this was not to please anyone. Our goal in this was to put forward what the U.S. security coordinator had found in his summary of the investigations to date. And just to take a step back, there were two elements in the statement that we put out yesterday. The first dealt with the forensic analysis of the bullet that killed Shireen Abu Akleh. And as you saw from the statement, the bullet was damaged to the extent that the independent third-party examiners weren't able to come to a conclusive judgment regarding the origin of the bullet. Now, the second element of that statement is broader. The second element of that statement deals with the summary of the investigations, that is to say, the summary of the Israeli, the IDF, and the Palestinian Authority, the PA, investigations that have been undertaken to date that the U.S. security coordinator put together in his role. The security coordinator, over the course of several weeks, had been granted access to both of those investigations. And in summarizing them, the security coordinator concluded that gunfire from an IDF position was likely responsible for the death of Shireen Abu Akleh. The security coordinator also found no reason to believe that it was an intentional killing, but rather the result of tragic circumstances during the course of an IDF-led raid in Jenin against factions of PIJ, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, on May 11th that had followed a series of attacks in recent weeks. So in terms of how the USSC, the U.S. Security Coordinator, came to that conclusion, as I said before, the Security Coordinator was granted access to the investigations of the two parties. The Security Coordinator also visited the site of Ms. Abu Akleh's death in order to garner additional information. So putting all of these pieces together, It led to the determination that gunfire from an IDF position likely resulted in her death. It also, in the course of the investigation, given the totality of circumstances, given the totality of facts that became available and that were made available to the U.S. Security Coordinator and his team, they found no reason to believe that it was an intentional killing, but rather the result of tragic circumstances in the course of a raid.
State Department spokesman Ned Price at today's briefing. Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid said that the IDF investigation was unable to determine who is responsible for the tragic death of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, but it was able to determine conclusively that there was no intention to harm her. Yair Lapid said expresses sorrow over her death and gave his full and unequivocal backing to IDF soldiers. President Biden today bestowing the Medal of Honor to four Army veterans who fought in the Vietnam War, upgrading the previous honors to now the highest U.S. military honor available. The ceremony was held at the White House.
Yesterday marked the 246th anniversary of this nation's independence. 246 years of struggle and sacrifice to uphold the principles so dear to the character of our nation: liberty, democracy, God-given rights of every individual. It's a journey that has never finished, and it never will be fully finished. It's a work that requires us to look ahead to the future we want to build, and to look carefully at our past. To understand fully where we've come from, for each of those 246 years, American patriots have answered our nation's call to military service. They stood in the way of danger, risked everything, literally everything, to defend our nation and our values. However, not every service member has received the full recognition they deserve. Today, we're setting the record straight. We're upgrading the awards of four soldiers who perform acts of incredible heroism during the Vietnam conflict. To respect the conspicuous gallantry and the intrepidability of their service. I mean, it's just astounding when you hear what each of them have done. They went far above and beyond the call of duty. It's a phrase always used, but it takes on life when you see these men. To the late Staff Sergeant Edward M. Canisero, to Specialist 5 Dwight W. Birdwell, to Specialist 5 Dennis M. Fufuji, and to Major John Duffy, I'm proud to finally award our highest military recognition, the Medal of Honor, to each of you, one posthumously. It has been a long journey to this day for those heroes and their families, and more than 50 years have passed, 50 years since the jungles of Vietnam, where as young men these soldiers first proved their mettle. But time has not diminished their astonishing bravery, their selflessness in putting the lives of others ahead of their own, and the gratitude that we as a nation owe them.
President Biden at today's White House ceremony, giving the Medal of Honor to those four Army veterans, won posthumously, recognized for heroism during the Vietnam conflict. The last surviving Medal of Honor recipient from World War II, Herschel Woody Williams, died last week. This past weekend at a memorial service in West Virginia, Senator Joe Manchin confirming that Williams will be lying in state in the U.S. Capitol building in Washington, likely next week. On Wall Street, the Dow today down 129, NASDAQ up 194, S&P up 6. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. You can get more of Washington's top stories sent to you every day by subscribing to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, Word for Word. You can sign up at c-span.org/connect. Have a good night.